reply from Prasad. That's the way to do it. Just hammered for four. He comes right back and uproots his off stump.
Hello, all you cricketing tragics out there, and welcome to another episode of the Uprooted Stumps podcast. I'm Arjun.
And I'm Gopal.
And we are your hosts, coming to you from London with guests from all over the world and talking about what's going on in cricket.
Kohli drives through the covers. It's into the fence like a tracer bullet.
That's how it's done.
We're almost at the end of the World Cup. We're recording this on the Thursday after Australia's just played Pakistan in a scintillating game. So we're going to talk about the World Cup final, what we think is going to happen. But I think we're going to focus a little bit more on India's performance. Today we have a new guest. This is an Indian fan. His name is Sharad Gangwani. He's very upset with the Indian team and with Virat Kohli in particular. So he's going to teach us about what India should be doing better going forward. Welcome, Sharad.
Thanks, Arjun.
So let's jump into, firstly, this is the World Cup itself. Let's keep India's performance aside. How have you enjoyed the World Cup so far? And what has been the surprise element for you?
It's hard to leave India's performance aside. The World Cup, actually, for us, is how India is playing and then how the other teams are playing. So obviously, we'll talk about India later. The surprise element has been Pakistan, in my opinion. We all did not expect them to play that well, the way they topped the group. I think they played really well in today's semi-final as well. They were obviously unlucky that Australia turned out to be better. And yeah, I think Pakistan was the only team that actually surprised me.
Okay, and then I was watching today and I had money on Pakistan, lost that as always. I don't know what to predict for the final now. Okay, all my predictions are going wrong. Although I did predict Pakistan will reach the semis, but I don't know what's going to happen. What do you guys think?
Honestly, all my predictions are going wrong as well. But I'm thinking of this as the 2015 World Cup final. But I really want this time that Kane Williamson should win it for New Zealand.
It just feels like Australia are clicking at the right time. And to me, it seems like New Zealand is the lucky team. In that one or two of them have carried them home. And the bowling has been exceptional, obviously. But in terms of batting, one or two of them have carried them home at the right time. So, and Australia seem to be overall a better package. Especially given we know that Devon Conway is out of the final, apparently.
Yeah.
And Kane Williamson is out of form. So it does. And Guptill has been out of form for the last, 7 years. Not 7 years, but he's been fantastic otherwise. But over the last couple of years, he's been out of form. So the batting looks shaky for New Zealand. If they pull this off, this will be fantastic.
Yeah, I guess most of the people are just going to be rooting for New Zealand. You know, it's anyone but Australia at this point. Because I think we're fed up with that. I don't know how that's going to happen, though. I think you're right. The bowling has to really click. I think the spinners have done well so far, the New Zealand spinners. But then again, so have the Australian spinners in Maxwell and Zampa.
Also, one more thing. Both the semi-finals won by the team winning the toss. It seems like the toss is going to rule the roost again. I hope New Zealand win the toss. That's going to be fun. And also, spare a moment for Justin Langer, who was almost out of a job before this World Cup began, with the revolt, people, him lashing out at his own players, saying they need to suck it up and do better after they got a lashing in Bangladesh. So looks like he's resurrected his career at least till the Ashes.
Yeah, but then Sharad, let's just jump into India now. Why did India lose their first two games?
There's a long answer for this, and there are multiple points which I feel actually why India performed so poorly in this World Cup. I think the main point that I think was poor scheduling. So India was already in England for a good 3 months. It was a very long tour. We had the World Test Championship final and then a lot of test matches to be played. which was a very intense series in terms of how it was being followed, how it was being played. And then they did not.
It was. It's an ongoing series, my friend. It's not in the past.
Good point.
There's still one test list.
Good point. But that's where I get even more frustrated, that you have such an amazing series going on, and then suddenly the players back out to go to IPL and play club cricket. So that's where I think the problem is happening. People, it seems like, are prioritizing club cricket over playing cricket for the country. So coming back to the scheduling part, you playing a long 3-month series, you're in England, suddenly you change gears and you go into an IPL, which is the continuation of the IPL. You spend a month just playing IPL cricket, club cricket, and then you don't get a break. You just have 2 days gap in between and you're getting into the World Cup. Your minds are so tired. Your body is so tired. You need time to get your energy back and be ready for such a big tournament. I think it was very poor on BCCI's side that they scheduled the IPL just before the World Cup. I think that was one of the biggest problems why India performed poorly.
So I take one side of this. I think Ravi Shastri has said something similar, right? He says that he blamed, in a sense, this biosecure bubble for 6 months that they were in and people being mentally and physically drained. But on the other hand, Sharat, you also said something else. You said that they had to change gears after the test match. Now, because they had IPL, they could continue in that same gear. In fact, because they had IPL in the UAE, they could continue with the same momentum straight into the World Cup. So isn't it better actually that there is an IPL that allows you to practice before the World Cup and gel?
You would think that way. But how do you expect players to perform when they've been out, they've not been home, they've not got any rest in between, they've just been playing constant cricket? Yes, playing in IPL probably would have prepared them for the World Cup had they gone into the IPL after a break. They were playing test match cricket, which is a very intense series, and you can't expect them to be out of the IPL with full energy to play a World Cup. World Cup is big. It's fine. It's a T20 World Cup, comes every 2 years, but still, it is still a World Cup. It's a multi-nation tournament. You win it, it's a big thing. You need to be mentally prepared for it, which I don't think the Indian team was.
But then what is the alternative? Are you going to cancel the IPL? You're going to say IPL? No. You don't have only half an IPL. We are all fans. We love watching the IPL. We love watching every sort of cricket match that's going on. So they're doing it in a way for viewers like us.
Agreed. But what do you prefer, IPL or World Cup?
I don't think it's a one versus the other thing, right? Because if someone says that they prefer the World Cup, then would you say, let's not have the IPL?
I wouldn't have had IPL right now, in between the England series and the World Cup. I would have let the players go back and one, get their energies back, get their mind back into place, gel together as a team. So you mentioned about gelling together in IPL, but that's with their own club teams. That's not with the Indian unit that's playing together in the World Cup. They're probably rivals when they're playing in the IPL. So how do they gel together? That's the other thing that was missing. Like people, all the 11 members who were playing the match, they all seemed so disconnected. They had no idea what their actual role was in the team. And if you just compare that with back in 2007, when we had a very young team, a lot of people had not yet played with each other, but they had enough time to spend with each other. They knew what their roles were. And every match, someone or the other stepped up, which was completely missing in this time. There was no motivation. And that's where I come to my second point, which is the way the management has handled things. Now, I'll start from one example, which is Akshar Patel was selected in the World Cup squad, the top 15. Suddenly, before the World Cup, he gets dropped and they take in Shardul Thakur. Why was Shardul Thakur taken in? It was because Hardik Pandya, they knew, could not bowl. But it wasn't Hardik's selection initially was supposed to be because he was ready to bowl. He would be played as an all-rounder and not a batsman. Now, if you're changing all these things at the last minute, what message are you giving back to your team members? Like, anyone can be dropped anytime because suddenly the management thinks something else. That's not how you go into a big tournament like a World Cup.
this seems to be the point that I most agree with Sharath, because we don't, India hasn't learned from the ODI World Cup, where we leading into the World Cup, we said Raidu is number four. Raidu is our number four. That guy is going to play. 9 months in, he's playing. And then 1 month before the World Cup, suddenly Raidu is no longer number four. And then we search for a new number four. And then it's Vijay Shankar, who has never been number four for his state side, but he gets slotted in as number four. He gets injured, and then Rishabh Pant becomes number four. And then KL Rahul suddenly becomes number seven. And then immediately after the World Cup, KL Rahul becomes our de facto keeper batsman, and Pant has no space in the team. And then Pant gets favor back again. We haven't learned from our mistakes. This is the thing with Morgan, who's also a very decisive and authoritative captain. For every person that he drops or selects, there is a like-for-like replacement. So if Vokes is not going to play, Willie is going to get a chance, and he knows that he's going to replace Vokes in the side. If Adil Rashid is going to be dropped, there is somebody else waiting in the wing, but Al Rashid has been such a stalwart, he never gets injured. But for every person that's going to be dropped, there is a like-for-like replacement, and people know what their roles are in the team. Whereas Kohli went into the World Cup saying he's going to open, and then IPL happens, and he's like, how can I make Rahul not open? Okay, so what about Surya Kumar Yadav? Leading into the World Cup, you said Surya Kumar Yadav is going to be number three, and then he suddenly becomes your finisher at number seven. I think in a game like T20, where small margins and strategies matter a lot, you need to have a clear idea of what your role is. And the idea that if you go for your role and you die performing your role, you're not going to get axed from the team. You are not going to be dropped from the team for going for it if you're a number eight finisher, because an opening batsman was dropped into this team and he scored a quick fire 30. That's what seems to be happening with this Indian
team. I 100% agree on that. And actually, that brings me to my third point, which is poor captaincy from Kohli. And just to add on to what Gopal was saying, Kohli did that with the 50-50 World Cup in 2019 with Raidu. Always announced he's our number four, and suddenly he's not part of the World Cup squad. All the time kept saying that, yes, Hardik will be playing, Hardik will be our all-rounder. He said he would be opening the innings, etc. Whatever Gopal said, totally agree with that. Now, let's say it was the selectors, the management that was making the decisions. But I think Kohli, being the captain, can actually overrule these decisions, which he did not. So most likely he was in support of these decisions. And the reason I'm saying that he could overrule it, because Dhoni did that when he was playing. He got rid of some of the senior players, which selectors would have always opted for them, but he had his strong reasons, and he made sure that what he wanted, he got that. If Kohli really wanted to do all these things, he could have got his way around it.
Okay, so let's say we have these three issues, and let's say that roles were unclear, captain is largely at fault. What if we had a different captain instead of Kohli? What if Rohit Sharma was captain? Would these issues have been much less of a concern?
It's really hard to say if Rohit was the captain, would these things have happened or not? Because obviously he's not been the captain because of Kohli. If at all he's been the captain, it's just been for small series or one or two games in between. So really hard to say that. But looking at Rohit's captaincy for Mumbai, the way Mumbai team plays, obviously leave apart this IPL, I think
Mumbai Indians. Yeah,
yeah, I think it would have been, he would have probably been better, but it's really hard to say unless we actually see him in the role for India.
Okay, so let's say we have these issues again now. We know what we think is the problem. Where do we go from here? India has many T20 series coming up. India has new captaincy. India has a new coaching team with Rahul Dravid involved. Do you think this is going to make a difference?
I really think this will make a difference. Kohli actually did a very good thing by resigning himself before the World Cup. He, I think, pretty much knew that he would his captaincy days are almost coming to an end. So he decided to go leave himself rather than getting fired. But that apart, with Dravid coming in, he's obviously he's worked with all the youngsters. He's developed that pipeline, so he knows what is there for him to pick up in the team. I really think it would take a while for the team to realign and be in sync with each other, but I think we can't go further negative from here. It can only be positive from where we are right now.
Yeah, actually, that's my worry also with Dravid coming up into the main team. I think it's amazing, but I think people are neglecting the great work that he's done in building that pipeline, like you said. And I worry who's going to build that pipeline right now. I think you and I were talking, Sharat, maybe Anil Kumble is in the reckoning, or Lakshman, or Bekur Villa, or someone is in the reckoning. But I don't know what pedigree they have to do the same work that Rahul Dravid has done. So that's something that we'll have to keep an eye on to see how these under-19s and how the under-23 domestic teams are going to be performing.
Absolutely. And I think that's where probably Dravid will also play a role, because he needs to select or decide who his successor would be in that role. And if at all, like, there are rumors it could be Lakshman or any other ex-player, I'm pretty sure what he's created over there would not be very difficult to maintain and continue for anyone qualified coming for that role.
I have a slightly different take on this. I think Dravid is premature. Dravid should have come in. I'm assuming that coaches have shelf lives, and especially in India, maybe 3 years. In that context, I think Dravid should have come in after this coach, when we'll have a completely new test team, completely new, or just about to get a completely new test team with Kohli, Pujara, Rohit kind of on the way out, last 1 year maybe left. And you have Padikkal and Ishan Kishan and Rutraj Gaikwad and all these people, Shubman Gill, all these people trying to make their debuts, make their mark in the team. That's when a coach like Dravid would have been more impactful, I feel. So in terms of he's a great idea, but maybe slightly too early.
Well, I guess maybe now is the time to start blooding all of those players into the international team, especially in the limited over games. See, phasing out the stalwarts that have played for so long. And then I think people like you mentioned, Padikkal, Gill, Shaw, etc., they're ready for the international stage, Ishan Kishan. So I also don't understand, why do you say that there's a shelf life?
So in India, no coach has lasted more than 3.5 years. Public memory kind of dies very quickly. We want results, and if we don't get it, it's not just because of public memory, but also it's a very stressful job, because I think it was Kumble who said something like, you need to be on the road for about 75 days a year, and then you also need, if you include travel and everything, it's almost as hectic as your playing days. So it can be quite taxing on a person with a young family like Dravid is. So I'm not sure he would last, or he would want to continue in this role post a certain milestone. Maybe he'll wait for a World Cup win or something like that and give it up.
Okay, so we have the India-New Zealand series coming up with 3 T20s, and then I think 2 test matches. And these are going to be played in India at the end of this month. There's a new team that's selected. This team is going to be led by Rohit Sharma. KL Rahul is vice-captain. And some of these names that you mentioned are in this squad. So Rutraj Gaikwad is in the squad. Ishan Kishan is in the squad. Venkatesh Iyer, who I'm really excited about, is in the squad as well. Surya Kumar Yadav, I think, has a chance to cement himself into this team. And then others like, I think, Harshal Patel and Avesh Khan are also in the squad. So it's kind of a new look squad. You know, you don't even have Bumrah in the squad. Of course, you don't have Kohli in the squad. How is this dynamic now between Rohit Sharma, Rahul Dravid, and all of these new players going to play out in this series?
I have actually two views over here. One, it's going to be great to get these youngsters some exposure with playing with the senior members. So Rohit is there, Bhuvi is there, KL Rahul is there. So they get that exposure, that which they should, because eventually they will be part of the main team. I mean, they are part of the main team, but they will be playing proper games with a 100% team. But then the problem I see again is scheduling. What if India was reaching the final? New Zealand is, and they immediately go to India and start playing again. Now, we can't play our actual team. So let's say Ishan Kishan or Surya Kumar Yadav, they play well. Surya Kumar Yadav plays well at number three, performs amazingly well. Ishan Kishan plays amazingly well at, let's say, on the opening slot or at number four. What do you do after all the main players come back? Do you bench these guys again, or do you shuffle their positions again? That again brings back the same thing. Like, what do you expect from these players? Would you not ideally want them to continue batting at the same position and cement their place rather than keep shuffling them around? It would be like exactly what happened with Rohit Sharma. He was shuffled around in the middle order, never really could cement his place because he wasn't a consistent performer. And then one day, Dhoni asks him to open. He performs really well. He becomes our opener, and you've seen all records breaking after that.
I think the solution to this is the mentality of international cricket management, coaches, captains changing very dramatically. I think we have seen some signs of that with this parallel tour that happened with India, being in England and Sri Lanka at the same time. And I've said it time and again, I'm a big fan of that theory of there being multiple squads. And when the mentality changes that it is okay to rest some of your biggest players for these less meaningful bilaterals, that is a mentality that many sports have. That is a mentality that we see in football, where we don't have the main Paul Pogba's or whatever the main players are playing these lower level games. It's a mentality we see in pretty much any high level professional sport that's managed by a coaching staff whose job is a 3-year long, 2-year long role, where they need to manage that player stakeholder, player relationship. If Virat Kohli has got nothing really to gain from being in that team besides making some runs or getting some statistics and getting some money, then dropping that will allow Ruturaj Gaikwad and Surya Kumar Yadav to become regulars in that team. And maybe there are some people who are kind of at the cusp of being in there and being out of there, or people who need to get back into form, who are, you know, your stalwarts, like maybe Bhuvneshwar Kumar, who needs to get back into form. Maybe you play Bhuvneshwar Kumar, but you don't need to play Bumrah in this sort of series because it's a bilateral. And once this mentality is taken on by by international teams and by coaches, that mentality will also be taken on by fans. So fans will not think of this as, wait, where is my Virat Kohli? If Virat Kohli is not playing, I'm not watching. Instead, fans will say, oh, okay, there's a new guy, Venkatesh Iyer. This guy is someone who I could be seeing for a long time. Maybe I should tune in to see what Venkatesh Iyer can do.
Well, Arjun, using this is the point that Sharat made. If we take everything you said exactly at face value, and that's why they're doing it and everything is good, I'm looking at the squad. What is their typical role? Rohit Sharma typically opens. KL Rahul typically opens. Ruturaj Gaikwad typically opens. Venkatesh Iyer typically opens. Ishan Kishan typically opens. Like, we are not creating a bench strength of people who have different strong points. Each of them is going to get a game. Rohit Sharma and KL Rahul will drop themselves and let these guys open and get a game. They'll perform really well, but you have not solved any of your existing problems. You have not found, you have not tested if Venkatesh Iyer is going to play in the middle order. You have not tested if Ishan Kishan can play in the middle order, because he was miserable in the middle order for Mumbai except in one season. And there's Akash Chopra made it very, very clear that he prefers Pant over Kishan in the middle order, but he prefers Kishan over Pant if you need an opener. And these are the kind of small things that we are still not focusing on. We've just rewarded people for exceptional performance in the IPL, and rightly so, but we have not really thought about what the point of the series is going to be.
I agree with this. I think you're bringing up a very different point to what Sharath was saying. Sharath's issue was the scheduling. I'm saying that even with a packed schedule, if you think of it as packed only from the customer, which is us, perspective, the viewer perspective, but not from the player perspective, because they are able to rotate themselves, then it's not an issue. The India's selection in this, not having a great middle order, is potentially an issue. And we've not even mentioned some other openers in here who, or top order players who could be playing, right? Shah Rukh Khan is a name, Prithvi Shaw is a name, Shubman Gill is a name. They're not even in the squad. So India's very top heavy. And that's an issue, I think, somehow that needs to be addressed. Without Hardik Pandya being informed, India lacks a number six.
Yeah, I did mention about scheduling, but the other point was what is the defined role for them? But what you're saying is not wrong. I think the solution to that problem is what probably England and other teams have done, have separate squads for each format. So you have this team. This is your team for, with keeping T20 World Cup 2022 in mind. You play all your T20 matches with majorly these players, unless they perform really poorly, in which case they are replaced. But they should know that they are the T20 specialists. That is where their focus should be. Their aim should be to get the 2022 World Cup home.
Yeah, and actually England, you mentioned them, have done some silly things in terms of, in the name of rotation. I think they've pioneered this, but they've also given it a bad name. Things like dropping Moeen Ali from the Test series after he performed so well, Joss Butler going home. Those are the sort of things that perhaps are not what rotation is about. Rotation is about identifying series, not games, but series that you keep aside some of your main players and give them that rest and allow others to showcase their skills and get back into form. Okay, so let's keep that aside. Let's talk about predictions for that series now, the India-New Zealand T20 series and the India-New Zealand Test series as well. What do you think is going to happen?
Honestly, when you were talking about bilateral series earlier, I think since it's a Test match, and if you've looked at the squad for the Test match, the first Test, Rahane is going to lead the game. He actually performed pretty poorly in the England tour. Rohit Sharma is being rested for it. Kohli would make a comeback in the second game. Fine, it's a bilateral series, but it still counts towards the Test Championship points. So I really think even if it's bilateral, it should be taken seriously because that is your preparation for the bigger event. As for what I think for this series, it's being played in India. It's Indian players always perform well in India. The spinners will be on the top. The batting will be scoring a lot of runs, even if we don't have a full-strength squad. I really think India are the favorites going into the series.
Okay, Gopal?
I like how Sharath hasn't even bothered to venture a guess on the T20 series because it's a non-event. And I kind of second that opinion. It doesn't matter. It's going to be 2-1 either to India or to New Zealand. That's my prediction. the Test series, I didn't know that Rohit and Kohli are both out of the first Test, which will be very, very difficult. And Shubman Gill and maybe Prithvi Shaw get to open. It'll be a very, very fun series to watch. But India will, I think India will win 2-0. There is a little doubt in my mind.
Yeah, or Ishwaran is also available. Maybe Mayank Agarwal gets another chance.
I think it would be Mayank because Prithvi Shaw will be in South Africa playing for India.
That is true.
But they could change that. Right? You could, as you said, with Harshal Patel, with Akshar Patel, they made a change. By the way, all of them are in South Africa. Priyank Panchal is captaining that India A squad. Prithvi Shaw is there. Abhimanyu Ishwaran is there. Devdutt Padikkal is there. Sarfaraz Khan, who I'm hoping, by the way, gets back into form. He had a terrific run 2 years ago, but Sarfaraz Khan is there. So these are basically everyone who's not in the main India team, but who's in that second team that was in England a few months ago, is going to South Africa. So we'll see. We'll see who plays. Maybe it's Agarwal and Gill, like you said. I think there's another call out right from the bowling side. It's Bumrah, Shami, and Shardul Thakur, all of whom were missing out. So I don't know who that leaves. Does that leave Bhuvneshwar Kumar and Ishant Sharma, along with Siraj, to lead the pace attack? I don't know if they're going to play, but maybe it does.
I hope Umesh comes back. Fast bowler, you know, even Bumrah got to bowl hardly any overs when England were here, except in the first test that we lost.
Yeah, it's a series being played in India, so fast bowlers collectively probably would bowl like 15, 20 overs in an innings. It would be spinners handling all the, taking all the wickets and making sure we get over.
Also, coming back to the, this brings us to an interesting question, right? Like the BCCI still remained silent on, is Rohit really the replacement for Kohli, or is it just temporarily he's going to take over the side till they decide who the long-term replacement is? And also, is the BCCI going to be okay with this idea that Kohli is only giving up the T20 captaincy and not limited overs captaincy? Because in general, you'd think that a captain would groom both the limited overs teams together.
Yeah, it's been confusing for sure. I agree with you. There's a lot of things that we as fans are speculating, and we should not be speculating. In fact, this was something that I was a bit hesitant about in the initial conversation we had in this podcast, which was, you know, us talking about people not knowing their roles. The thing is, it seems that way to us, and it's hard to argue against it. But I think there may be something, and I hope there is something in the background within the teams and dressing rooms where they are talking about their roles. Rohit Sharma did actually say after India were eliminated from the tournament that these players are very senior players who've been playing T20s, and they all know what their roles are. So I'm hoping that something good actually is going on that we're just not aware of. And similarly, I'm hoping that something with the captaincy is also happening. And maybe it's not. Maybe it's Rahul Dravid who has to come and fix all of that.
I like how you're hoping for it. But if things were happening that way, I'm pretty sure our performance would have been better in the World Cup.
Yep. But let's not take away credit from this Ravi Shastri, Virat Kohli regime. They've done really well. When Ravi Shastri, in fact, his first appointment many years ago, I think it was, 7 years ago or something, in 14, till where India is right now, is a test team. India's won, India's, you know, wins abroad have come, series wins abroad have come under this regime, Kohli and Shastri. So just if Shastri's listening, you know, shouldn't worry about us. Do you guys want to talk anything else about India? Because I wanted to talk about the Syed Mushtaq Ali Trophy that's going on.
Jump right in. It's the preeminent.
Are you guys following tournament. That?
Forget the World Cup. Everybody's talking about Syed Mushtaq Ali.
Yeah, because Manan Vora is batting and Ajinkya Rahane is batting, right? That's what we want to see.
And our friend Gopal, why don't you... Ruturaj Gaikwad.
Yeah, so he's... Look, he had a very strong start to the tournament. So the Syed Mushtaq Ali Trophy, by the way, is what, Gopal? It's a T20 trophy domestic?
Yeah. No, it's okay. The Ranji Trophy or county cricket equivalent. It's not the Blast because... actually, you can call it the NatWest Blast because NatWest Blast is not really franchise, right? It's still county. Correct. So yeah, it's that.
It's not the 100. Yeah.
It's not the 100.
So it's... And it has all the domestic teams in there. I think there's 20 teams or something that are playing. Currently, we've finished the group stages. In the group stages, some of the teams that did really well include Maharashtra, who Gaikwad has become the captain right now. And he had a very good start to the tournament. He was scoring 50s at tremendous strike rates. Rajasthan is doing pretty well as well. Lomror Mahipal Lumrore is doing well for them. Mumbai continue to disappoint. I have been following them quite closely. You know, Ajinkya Rahane has made some runs, but you know, those are runs like he made in the last game, and those are runs that have come in losing causes, and those are runs that have not come at stellar strike rates. So there's a big problem in the Mumbai team. The problem generally has been the bowling. There's really no one in the bowling. Funnily enough, one of Mumbai's stalwart batsmen, Siddesh Lad, has been one of Mumbai's best bowlers in this series, which shows how poor Mumbai's bowling is. Mumbai's bowling also includes Shivam Dubey, who basically has been making scores of 20 runs in 12 balls every game. And that's it. He's not really taking it to that next level. So that whole concept of him replacing or him being that backup to Hardik Pandya is just failing, because he's not scoring those 40s and 50s, nor is he taking those three or four wickets or two or three wickets even. So, and of course, towards four players from the Mumbai camp caught COVID in the middle of the tournament, including Sarfaraz Khan. So that hit them as well. But, you know, Shubman Gill's been playing decently. Priyank Panchal, the captain of Gujarat, has done well. But really, you're right. The star of this whole thing is Rituraj Gaikwad. He's obviously knocking on the door, and he's in this team. So I'm really excited to see him.
I think it's also important because there's going to be a big IPL auction where every team the entire squad is going to change. So all these guys performing in the Syed Mushtaq Ali Trophy will get quite a good look in and good bids. And hopefully they get to keep some of that money.
Yeah, that's very true. I think, and I'm excited about that auction and going to see who actually ends up being retained and who actually gets dropped. I think, I don't know, I'm super excited to see what happens with Mumbai. In fact, quite nervous as well to see some of Mumbai's best names being stolen by other teams. Who do you think Mumbai is going to retain?
Pollard, Sharma and Bumrah, right?
Yeah, you could retain four. So you can retain one or two foreigners. You have the choice. And then two or three Indians.
I think after the Quinton debacle, Quinton is out for a status conscious Ambanis. So maybe they'll buy him back in the auction, but they're not going to retain him. Pollard gets retained, and Trent Bolt, if they want, gets retained maybe.
No, I guess one, right? Because yeah. You have so many Indians that you want to retain.
Correct. So then it definitely Rohit Sharma and Jasprit Bumrah. And then maybe Kishan, but I don't think so. Maybe Sky, but I don't think so.
And Hardik Pandya.
Hardik Pandya, I think they'll let go.
Whoa, big news.
I don't think Hardik Pandya is getting retained this time. Unless he magically starts bowling again, which he tried to towards the end of the World Cup, just so that he can get his IPL selection. But yeah, I don't think he's going to get retained by Mumbai.
Okay. Gopal, it's interesting you brought up this Quinton thing. So you were obviously referring to the bending the knee issue that Quinton de Kock unwittingly brought upon himself, this infirmity, right? There's similar stuff going on in England as well with the Yorkshire Cricket Board. Azim Rafiq being involved, new names coming out and speaking about harassment and racist abuse that they've had in the last 10-15 years in Yorkshire Cricket Club. We saw resigning CEOs and general managers. Today, someone from the board has resigned. We saw a statement from Joe Root, long-time Yorkshire player, an England captain currently. He's come out with a statement asking for suggestions, talks, democracy, on how to improve the situation. It's a very touchy situation, so I don't know how much we could really speak about it without knowing the facts.
It's not touchy at all. I mean, it's very easy. You mean the blame game? Whom do we blame? Yes, we can't obviously blame somebody without even having access to that document that they keep referring to. But the thing that is very plain, and this is what I admired both Nasir Hussain and Michael Atherton for saying, in no uncertain terms, that the reaction of the board has been abysmal. Even on the redacted version that they let out, they said this person used derogatory term to refer to Azeem. And they said, oh, it was all good-natured banter, so we are not going to censure him. I mean, at the very least, given there is so much focus on this, they should have said it may not have been intentioned that way, but we are going to censure him, or we are going to set an example and tell our people that this is not acceptable, and we will at least symbolically do something about it, instead of saying, oh, it was good-natured banter. The fact that it's such a loaded word, and they knew it's a loaded word, and then they say it's equivalent to somebody else calling somebody Zimbo. Zimbo is basically short for Zimbabwe. It has no historical connotations connected to being derogatory in any way. And they're equating two different things and conflating the topic and not being very clear about this has been disappointing. And I think that is the one thing that I'd say very, very, I mean, I have not grown up in this country. So I don't know if I have, like, I can't speak for people who have experienced that abuse growing up. But it seems like you would be put off from the game if you were constantly told that by your friends, people who are who mean it well. Without really understanding the context, and then your board says, oh, it's okay. It was just banter.
I remember on a podcast about maybe 6 months ago, we were talking about the difference in culture between Indian, not domestic, but Indian recreational sport and British or UK recreational cricket. And we spoke a lot about the topic of Asian youngsters in England and why there is such an underrepresentation of such cricketers who obviously are playing at our level, right? At a very recreational level. They're all Indians, Pakistanis, Sri Lankans, Bangladeshis, Afghanis, Nepalis, but they're not playing at just that semi-professional level. And the reason we had was, the number one reason we had was education. That our parents and our families want us to focus on a real career, which is to become an engineer or a doctor or a TikToker or whatever, and not play cricket. But this is something that's completely different. And I feel, based on this, that there is so much systemic racism that is going on that we're not aware of, that is part of the lad culture of these clubs, particularly these northern clubs, that you're right, Gopal. It will put off any youngster from playing this sport for many, many years to come after today. And I think it's set back English cricket tremendously. And I think that pipeline being lost would be very hard for England to recover from.
And one more point to make here is... Joe Root's comment, it seems like he's saying, yes, this is a problem. I recognize it. You guys better recognize it. It seems to be from a moral superior standpoint. And let me put myself as an example. I think, Arjun, you were part of the discussion about 1.5 years back. I very ignorantly asked directly a Pakistani friend of ours in Merton, why is the P word so derogatory? Isn't it just short for Pakistan? And then he was like, he immediately shut me down and he explained to me, because he knew I was coming from a reasonable place. I was genuinely curious. He explained to me what it meant. And then I was not fully satisfied with the answer. I went back home. I researched what it meant. And this is me not being a white British person growing up in this country and being ignorant about it, right? And that is the kind of education that needs to happen, even for people who do not believe in racism, to kind of educate them, educate us, you, me, everybody, that this exists. And you may have opinions which are non-kosher, which can be hurtful. So to learn, I don't think there seems to be a strict line that people have in their minds that I am racist or I am not racist. And if I am not racist, then I don't need to learn anything more about this topic because I know that I am not racist. And I'm not sure it's quite as clear-cut as that.
And can you educate our listeners as to what really is that connotation or the underlying meaning that perhaps a lot of us are not aware of?
It's very, very deep. Basically, skinhead culture in the UK started with a lot of abuse because it started with an influx of Asians into this country in the 70s and 80s from Africa. And from there, it was used as a slur to refer to people from the South Asian community, not just referring to their heritage, but also the way they live, the things they are supposed to believe, according to skinheads, the reason why they don't belong, and so on and so forth. So it comes with a loaded set of baggage, other meanings associated with it. So I don't think we should dignify this podcast or any platform by referring to all the things that it means. But suffice to say, it is not just a short or an abbreviation for Pakistan. It comes loaded with a lot of other things that go along with it. So to a pure racist person, or if there is something like that, it means a lot more, and it's putting someone down. It's bringing them down. It's devaluing them. It's all of
Sharat,
that.
Sharat, where does England and England's domestic as well as international cricket go from here?
So I was just thinking about the event that happened, I think, a few months back when Ollie Robinson was suspended by ECB over a racist tweet that he'd made a few years back. I think that was, I know we had a discussion back then, but the suspension was a message that was sent that racism at any point, irrespective of how old you were, would not be accepted. And I think a message like that needs to go out to say this is not acceptable, even if it is being done or said, even if it's a banter or a funny thing that you're saying to a friend, it should just not be acceptable, period. There is nothing more that should be said about it. That's a message that they need to send out. And if that message is communicated well, I think the concern that you had about the pipeline for English cricket, that probably won't be a concern then. But if they continue to defend the way they are doing it right now, I agree with you that a lot of young cricketers who would have wanted to play would now hesitate to go into the sport.
Okay. Well, I think that's a wonderful way of talking about the future and the prosperity that we hope will be introduced back into the club cricket that we all know and love. Thank you for joining us today, Sharat. It's been an absolute pleasure having you.
Thank you, guys. It was amazing to be on this.
Okay, you're welcome back anytime. Thanks, Gopal.
Thank you. That's all for today, folks. Wherever you are in the world, have a great day, night, or commute, and stay safe. Remember, cricket is the winner.